Now, the Buckeye Extra Podcast with Rob Aller, Bill Rabinowitz, and Joey Kaufman from the Columbus Dispatch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first Buckeye Extra Football Podcast of the 2022 season. We are very fortunate that Mike Bardino, did I get it right this time, Mike?
Bardino. That's close. Close enough,
Bill. Bardino. You don't pronounce the second R. I understand that.
Bardino, yeah.
Bardino from the South Bend Tribune covers Notre Dame, and he's going to tell Buckeye fans what they can expect from the Irish on Saturday night. First of all, let me get some of your background. You're a veteran in this business. Tell me where you've been before and how you ended up in South Bend.
Wow, might be easier to just tell you where I haven't worked or what sports I haven't covered. But no, I've been blessed to be doing this professionally since 1989, and been a few twists and turns along the way. But a lot of baseball in my background, Marlins and Twins, Dolphins beat in the NFL. I grew up in South Florida, so 32 total years of my life has been in South Florida, but since 2018, here in South Bend, and I was at the Indianapolis Star covering Notre Dame for two seasons, 18 and 19. Part of the merger, I lost out in that, and then I freelanced for the Chicago Sun-Times and Forbes for a couple of years, and then since February, back at it for the South Bend Tribune and ndinsider.com, and it's pretty cool that this matchup, how nice of them to make it an all-Gannett market matchup here at with the Columbus Dispatch.
Yeah, and where can people find you on social media?
Well, everywhere, hopefully, on Twitter, at Mike Bardino. Little TikTok now, that's been doing well. People like these little practice clips. That's Mike Bardino, NDI, like Indy Insider, and of course, Instagram and Facebook and everywhere like that. But, you gotta keep churning it out these days because the demand and the interest never stops, and that's good.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's get into this. What is the level of anticipation in South Bend for this game?
Well, I'd say it's pretty high. Perhaps mixed with a little bit of dread because, every time Notre Dame has one of these signature games, Clemson at home in 2020 aside, it hasn't gone well for Notre Dame. There have been some closer losses, on the road, maybe like you think of 2019 at Georgia. You think of a few trips down to Clemson or Florida State earlier in the Brian Kelly era, but, this is the Marcus Freeman era, and at the moment he's 0-1 after they blew a 21-point first-half lead against Oklahoma State in that Fiesta Bowl, and the oddsmakers seem to think pretty convincingly that Marcus Freeman will start 0-2 in his Notre Dame career. But if he somehow were to get out of there on Saturday night with a big upset win, I know that doesn't happen very often in Columbus, but four times losing at home in the last decade. But if somehow that were to happen, you talk about a springboard, it's already been an era of the honeymoon has really been lengthy here. And I don't know that it'll necessarily end abruptly if Notre Dame even gets drilled by four touchdowns on Saturday night, because Marcus Freeman has worked so hard in these 9 months on the job as the head coach to rebuild a lot of the connections, to recruit at a higher level than Notre Dame has at any point since Lou Holtz was here, and really just to put a friendlier and hipper face on the franchise than maybe Brian Kelly did, a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff. But you cannot complain about Brian Kelly's results overall of the last five seasons, all in 10 wins or more.
Has Marcus Freeman started saying family with an accent?
No, it's amazing how he's avoided the misstep, because he's been pushed out of his comfort zone a number of times. If you've seen some of these attempts at acting, he's had to share the screen with the Manning brothers. That's not easy, because they do this, that's basically their second career. He had to do the Hangover spoof out there in Vegas, and he didn't have as many lines as Isaiah Foskey. That was the true MVP of that one, I thought, the defensive end. He was just rattling off dialogue. Right, but right. Mark Streamer came up. Main thing was he seems to always come out of this looking friendly and cool. And that's kind of the one reason why he's such a good recruiter to this point. And they're seeking their note. They are going head to head for a lot of guys with Ohio State, and they're certainly when it comes to the wide receiver group, Brian Hartline still seems to be getting the final word. I covered him with the Dolphins too way back when, so I'm not surprised that he's really good at what he does.
You know, as you mentioned, he's still in the honeymoon phase. How different is he than Brian Kelly, and is the honeymoon in part because he is so different than Brian Kelly?
Well, you know, I think it's important to remember that Brian Kelly had a different approach, and it was by design. There was a reboot there along the way. You know, 4-8 in 2016, and it was determined that he was spread too thin and that he needed to be more of a CEO coach and maybe a CEO recruiter, and that he needed to pick his spots on that. And they still recruited at a high level, a top 12 level, let's say, but he also along the way said some things that sounded like excuses. And when he talked about Notre Dame shops down a different aisle when it comes to recruiting than a lot of schools out there, that sounded like they weren't really turning over all the stones that could be turned over. And Marcus Freeman comes in and says he wanted to, you know, basically, well, think big is their recruiting slogan. And they have gotten into conversations with the number of five stars. They did. Keon Keeley slipped off the hook recently, a five-star out of Tampa, an edge rusher that you guys know about. But in general, they're shooting for the moon more often, and they're not making excuses on the recruiting trail. And he's got that pitch down pretty pat. And I would say that it's all honeymoon until you lose a game like this, or lose to. Here's the thing: Brian Kelly did so well that nobody talks about because it was boring, right? 42 straight wins against unranked teams. Notre Dame did not step in it over those final 5 years. They always did what they were supposed to do, and sometimes they put a little bit of a scare into a team they weren't supposed to beat. But generally, it was chalk. And I think there's a lot to be said for what they did in after the reboot, which was across the board, the whole program, with the strength and conditioning and the way they went about, their daily schedule and the recovery, everything. They really invested in it and it worked. And then at some point, you know, we know the stories down there at LSU now, mispronouncing family the first time. And now, you know, not even releasing who his quarterback's going to be and ticking people off that way. But, all coaches are secretive. That's part of it. And I think that Brian Kelly was a CEO coach and maybe a bit robotic by design, and that was the way that he worked best. Marcus Freeman will have to find his stride and his best way, but right now there's a lot of passion in the voice and there's a lot of belief he's a rainmaker to an extent, but it's not like this was a broken program.
Right.
Not at all.
Right. Would you, if you could give Marcus Freeman truth serum, would he say that he's happy to have this be the opener against his alma mater on the road, or would he rather have a cupcake?
Oh, my goodness. No, you definitely, you don't want to see, forget the homecoming angle, any of that. You don't want to play a quality opponent like this to start the year, not just a quality opponent, but a juggernaut. And, you know, this is a top five matchup, two against five, but I wonder how many top five matchups in history have had a point spread like this, 17.5. Tyler Buckner's never started a game as a college quarterback. He's a sophomore with 35 total pass attempts in his life. And so one of the questions today that I had for Marcus Freeman at the press conference was, I'd asked Tommy Reese, the offensive coordinator, this back in spring, but I just want to, it fascinates me that they knew back at the Fiesta Bowl, which is really meaningless. It was a meaningless game other than sending out the seniors on top. But against an Oklahoma State defense that was crafted by Jim Knowles, that was running Jim Knowles' concepts, even if he wasn't there no longer in the employ of the Cowboys. But that would have been a great time to give Tyler Buckner a few series at least, or maybe a whole half, to get used to what they knew was waiting for them, because it wasn't like Knowles was out there as a free agent. He was the next coordinator on the schedule after that game. And so Freeman said today that no regrets, but, you know, it didn't go the way they wanted. They had a plan, and it didn't work out to get. Now, what I had understood was if they, what Tommy Rees said back in March, was the plan was if they get a first down after just a first down or two on the first series of the third quarter with Jack Cohn at quarterback, up two touchdowns at that point, then the next series was going to belong to Buckner. And then if they could, you know, if there's wiggle room, then he could really get a good look. Instead, that immediately became a shootout and 37-35 loss for Notre Dame. And in the moment, in the excitement of his first game ever, and it was kind of chaotic on that sideline, it would appear, from what we could see, Tyler Buckner never got in the game. And I do think that's going to be a subtext of what we see on Saturday night, because if he looks confused, well, maybe he would have been confused anyway, but they'll always wonder if he just could have been out there against the crazy hybrid stuff and everybody wandering around before the snap.
Right. How would you describe Marcus Freeman in terms of the imprint he's put on the program already? I mean, is there kind of a signature moment or something he's just, boy, that really stands out?
Well, he has a great warmth about him. He exudes warmth. Not a lot of college football coaches are known for that. He has an empathy about him. He has spoken in terms, he speaks to himself as a teammate, essentially. He wants to enable those around him, including players, to reach their potential and his coaches. And so he's not lording over those. He doesn't rule by fear. He tries to build loyalty by being right down there with you, right down to the point of being in the workout rooms this off season at 5:30 in the morning. That goes back to his youth, when he would be going a full workout with his dad, who was in the Air Force all those years, in the family kitchen. And so he's there early, so the players have said since the off season, it did mean something to them to see a coach right there, you know, sweating alongside them, jumping into drills. I mean, I have video up of him, shadowing these young receivers. There's a lot of uncertainty about the wide receiver group and some injuries, and he's right in there getting a real close look, and even, you know, mock defending them. He's not watching from a tower. He's right there on the ground. He tries to be at each station throughout the course of a practice to reinforce what the coaches are saying, his assistants, and just to make sure that he's fully available. So it'd be a great story if somebody could figure out if there's actually a Marcus Freeman double running around, because North Korea style, because it does seem like there just can't possibly be enough hours in the day for this guy to be everywhere that he goes. Yeah. But he's done it so far. It's amazing.
I mean, he's only 36, so he can still kind of do that stuff, right, physically.
Six kids at home, though. That ages you in dog years right there. I mean, six kids. That's incredible. So, yeah, superhuman in a lot of ways, organization. Haven't seen him snap at anybody yet in the media. And, you know, sometimes we get to be a little annoying because we're the conduit between the fan base and the people that we interview. But, we'll see. Even after that loss against Oklahoma State, he kind of pronounced the honeymoon over at that point, but didn't snap at anybody. And I disagree. I think he's still working with house money at this point. We'll see how Saturday goes.
What has he said about playing his alma mater, that angle? I'm assuming he's pretty much dismissing it.
Yeah, what was the word? Emotionless. He can't afford to be swept up in that kind of nostalgia. He's got too much to figure out. His staff is overhauled. I mean, that's the thing. The Marcus Freeman hire was cloaked in the idea of continuity, because they didn't go through a search. It was done in a matter of days and not weeks, and it was done to make sure that Tommy Rees didn't follow Brian Kelly down there to LSU or somewhere else, and they kept the group together at that point. And then subsequently, because the coaches were well-regarded, they ended up with seven different assistants. There was turnover. You know, Lance Taylor's the offensive coordinator now at Louisville, and John McNulty's the OC at Boston College, et cetera. So there is a lot less continuity in a continuity hire than you could possibly imagine. And I don't think that he's going to get swept away at all by the trip back to the horseshoe. One thing he did say today that was interesting was he credited Brian Kelly. He said he learned last year before they went down to Tallahassee and also Blacksburg, two noisy environments. Brian Kelly used video to prepare the team for what they would be seeing. You know, whether it was the spear in the ground, the fiery spear at midfield, or Enter Sandman, all that stuff. What do you think he would be showing them about the horseshoe on video?
Well, hang on, Sloopy, and you know, stuff like that. I guess. Well, that's not like intimidating.
Dotting of the eye. They won't be seeing that. Yeah, right. I don't know, but. Right. It's great tradition, but do you think some people have pushed back a little? Because Michael Mayer was pretty interesting, and this guy's a trip to cover, and he's getting more enjoyable now that he knows he's down to his last year. But the tight end, he's fun to cover from our perspective, not to cover on the field. I wouldn't want to have to do that.
Yeah.
But he's a monster. But he basically was blowing off the idea that the horseshoe would be a noise factor. Anything to worry about, even for Buckner or the line, etc. But I've never covered a game there, but it sure looked noisy to me over the years on television. How do you think, how much of a factor will that be for a first-time starter and a line that's in a bit of disarray with Jarrett Patterson right now?
Yeah, it'll be hopping Saturday night. I mean, first of all, there's a level of anticipation about this season in particular. There's, you know, last year, I mean, most programs can go 11-2, and it's a great year, right? Win the Rose Bowl, it's a great year. Ohio State, you know, you lose to Michigan, you don't win the Big Ten championship the first time, and you know, after winning four in a row, it's like, okay, it planted a seed, a hunger in them. And I don't think they were complacent. I don't think that's part of their culture. I think that they fight that. But when you beat a team, your rival, 10 times in a row, you can't help but think, well, this is the natural order of things. And to lose to them the way they did and have Michigan take away everything that they wanted to accomplish, that made them very hungry all offseason. So, look, this game, Notre Dame, was going to be a big game anyway. But after that loss last year to Michigan and having to stew about it for 9 months, yeah, the Rose Bowl win was nice, but, you know, the game that mattered was Michigan. And they're going to come in pumped. They feel very good about Jim Knowles, the defense that he has brought in. And, you know, C.J. Stroud running that offense again. There's a kind of a 2019 feel to this team. But they got to prove it. And Notre Dame is certainly good enough to beat them if they don't play well. So I think some trepidation. Here, I also think there's a lot of confidence because they think that that Ohio State should be really good. But it's, look, this is a great opener, right? I can't even think of an opener that's had this level of anticipation to, you know, hugely successful programs that are supposed to be good. I know Ohio State's 2 and Notre Dame's 5, and this year, tell me if you agree with Mike, that the consensus is that there's Alabama and Ohio State, and maybe Georgia, and after that, there's a big drop off to number 4 and beyond.
Yeah, I mean, Clemson's defense is worthy of the playoff, but what are you getting out of the quarterback?
Exactly.
I do think they have weapons for him. His best game of his life was at Notre Dame Stadium in Trevor Lawrence COVID game, but he's been really erratic since Ungulele. But no, I think that seems like a fair read. I have to do that. AP Top 25 voting this year for the first time in my career. That was something I hadn't done, and I'm regretting that already. Regretting it already, but there's a lot of parity, and you know, you really could put about after you get after that first group, you know, do another 15 in a hat and shuffle it, and then you put another 20, 25 in a hat and shuffle it, and I don't think they let you do that. I think you actually have to put them in an order.
Yeah, that is true.
By 11 a.m. on Sunday. I don't like that.
I did it for a few years and was more than happy to give it up.
Yeah, what was I thinking? But anyway, yeah, I'm going to, if you get a text about 10:45 some Sunday morning now that we're doing this, I think I can lean on you for that. I'll be like, help me, what'd you see? Because there's just too much to see and there's too many contenders for the back end of that 25. Too many teams that could, you know, some fan base get on Twitter and start calling you an idiot. They'll do that anyway.
Oh, I left out one team just inadvertently, I won't say which teams. They were like maybe 18th or something like that, and I just left, and it was done on purpose, just an oversight. Oh, my Lord, you would have thought that I'd declared war on the state. and then I voted for, I think it was North Dakota State. Yeah, obviously it's an FCS team. And, because they were undefeated, they'd beaten some good teams, and I thought, there's nothing stopping me from voting for them.
Got a little fancy there.
Oh, I should have run for governor.
Wow. It's gonna be interesting. It'll be an education, and I'm already looking forward to it being over with. But it is an honor, and I do think everybody, you know, when you get to do it, when I get to do it here, it's we take it seriously. I think it's important, for all jokes aside, that people know I'm gonna do everything I can to be as informed as I can be, and that involves all the injuries, that involves the backdoor covers and the type of meaningless touchdown garbage time that you should be disregarding, all that. We're going to try to get it right, but it does seem like there may not be very much movement at the top, or even in that, top five or six or so, something like that. But Notre Dame's five at the moment, and then already you're thinking, well, how far do you drop them? I've been asked that question. How far do you tend to drop them, you know, if they do lose by three touchdowns to a super team? And probably not very far.
Right. Let's get into the matchup and some of the Irish players. Let's start with Tyler Buchner. Unlike C.J. Stroud a year ago, at least he's actually thrown a pass in a game. So, he's got that at least. I understand he's more of a dual threat than Jack Cohn was. How would you describe his game?
Well, no doubt about that. I think we're more of a dual threat than Jack Cohn. Bless him. He's a nice fella, but he was statuesque back there and put a lot of pressure on a line that wasn't exactly Joe Moore award worthy. So they've got Harry Eastand back here, who did craft Joe Moore award winning lines when he was here the first time, and long, long resume for Harry. And so he's trying, he juggled things, and one of the things they did is they took an All-American, a three-year starter, Jared Patterson, and kicked him over to left guard. And just when that was starting to take, at least in the viewings that we could see, it was Zeke Correll from Cincinnati as the center. Patterson got the foot sprain on August 15th, and so they're mixing and matching. I do think your listeners should know that it almost certainly will be if Patterson can't go, and they're hoping that he gets into practice this week. We have not seen him yet without a boot. We've not seen him do anything but rehab on the side since the sprain. It'll be Andrew Krstofek, whose claim to fame was seven starts down the stretch last year, played a lot in an eighth game, and he was Phil Dracovic's left tackle in high school back in the Pittsburgh area. And a nice fella, but not a three-time All-American. So, or three-year starter and an All-American. So, there's that. Buchner is very mobile, very fast, but the last time he started a game, here's a wacky stat for you. I'm gonna mess it up, but his senior year, down in the San Diego area, was gonna be at Helix High, Bill Walton's old high school, and that got knocked out due to COVID. The whole season was wiped out in California high school football that year. So he hasn't started a game since his junior year at a fancy school called the Bishop's School. And they take on other schools like the Knights or the Queens or something. But he's very mobile, but to a large extent, until he got this, he would come in for a few plays here, a few plays there. Last year, he was running away from, kids whose parents invented stuff. And now it'll be a little different. So, we'll see. We'll see. He is fast. He is a fine athlete. He can throw. He throws a nice deep ball, but I will tell you that he struggles with his footwork, the short and intermediate stuff. We see stuff flying all over the place, and he'll admit the number one thing, like a lot of quarterbacks, like a lot of pitchers, he flies open with that front shoulder. So he has to remind himself to stay close to be accurate. And you got a lot going on. Forget the Jim Knowles defense and the disguise and everything else. you know, you kind of want your quarterback to feel confident that where he thinks he's throwing, the ball actually go there, and he's going to have to go through his progressions. He's going to have to look off safeties. Tanner McAllister being one of them, pretty important piece there, and fascinating to me as well that he's sitting right there. And it's a tough assignment for Tyler Buchner, but he's also growing into his leadership. He's naturally kind of soft-spoken, just kind of not necessarily the loudest voice in the room. That would have been Drew Pine. I've written this. The Drew Pine who lost out in that battle shows the more obvious leadership qualities and the ability to rally the room, et cetera, the fiery speaker. But Buchner is going to grow into that, they believe, and they just think that they're betting on the whole package here. And I think he has a chance to be very, very good. But this is certainly a tough way to get going.
Right. And you alluded to this. We know the wide receivers have been decimated by injuries. What's their situation right now? Well, how's that room look?
Well, it's a bit of flux. I do think that you may see some Tobias Merriweather, a freshman who just got here in June and has flashed. Was a four-star recruit from the Portland area. He's interesting. Xavier Watts has been working both ways. He came here as a wide receiver from the Omaha area, converted to safety. He's making great progress there. Just out of need, back to receiver. Kind of a natural, really good hands. It's possible we'll see some of him. I don't put much stock in the depth chart, but the depth chart showed Jaden Thomas as a starter. He hardly got on the field last year. Big body guy, good blocker, and not necessarily the speediest guy. That would be Braden Lindsey as the speed guy that could take the top off the defense or beat you on a jet sweep. Lorenzo Styles, I'd be remiss to say. I mean, he had a huge Fiesta Bowl, the whole Ohio State angle, and his brother across the way, Sonny. That's all fascinating stuff. And Lorenzo, for Notre Dame to win this game, even probably to stay in this game, Lorenzo Styles probably going to have a Fiesta Bowl-like game for him. And he's capable of that because he's sure-handed and certainly knows the offense. Got a lot of run down the stretch last year when Avery Davis got hurt, and Avery Davis got hurt again. And so two ACL tears in about 9 months, and that did it for probably for his career. But he's still one of the team captains, which is interesting. I don't know too many instances where somebody's so well-respected and you know they're out for the year that they're captain for a second straight year, unable to take the field. But that's the case with Avery Davis. Well, yeah. Joe Wilkins Jr. is another name to keep in mind. He certainly has flashed early in season, very, very experienced guy. But in general, no, it's not the Ohio State receiver run.
But they do have a big-time weapon in Michael Mayer. What makes him special?
He's faster than a 260-pound man has any right to be. He's once he has the ball in his hand, it's like a car chase or something in Hollywood. It's all kinds of wreckage left behind him, he's known for hurdling fallen defenders, and he's had a couple of moments of drops in that Florida State game even last year, a couple of drops in the opener. But he is, he's really good. There's a reason that you hear his name mentioned as a potential top 10 pick in the draft. And they don't usually invite college guys down there to that tight end U. And, he was the guy who got to go hang out with Kittle and Olsen and all those other dudes. So he's already been welcomed into a fraternity that, is generally closed to amateurs, but, we're in the NIL era and we're also, you know, eyes wide open about what this guy's going to be doing next spring. But he's, the other thing I'd be remiss to say, at 260, he can flex out wide. He can be, he can be out to this. He can be your wide out. He doesn't just have to be in the slot and has the speed to get by a corner potentially. Of course, the combination of speed and strength, he's just going to throw people around if you try to press him. I do think that he'll get a lot of attention. As Knowles
right.
assistance gave yeah. him in the Fiesta Bowl. I have to remind myself of that. But he had a weird Fiesta Bowl for him because there were periods where he was really just a decoy, and then there was like a second quarter where he just went off, and then halftime adjustments, he was back to being a decoy. Actually, they wanted him to be the guy, and he couldn't get open because he got so much attention.
I'm assuming that Notre Dame's going to want to pound the ball, even with the offensive line and a bit of flux. And to keep Ohio State's offense off the field, in part, what can you tell me about Chris Tyree, who I'm assuming is their number one running back?
I wouldn't make that assumption, Bill. Okay. I know that he's the most experienced guy, but the guy who had the best camp is Audric Estime, and he's got some Jerome Bettis qualities to him, but and the personality to match. He's a guy that we kept hearing about that kept flashing that and is just saying his confidence is through the roof. He's very inexperienced. He's got just very little time on the field last year, but just a bruising 228-pounder who's got a little foot fire as Dylan McCullough, the running backs coach, well-traveled Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl ring coach, says. Logan Diggs also back in the mix, and we didn't expect that after he suffered a torn labrum in the blue-gold game. Had surgery at the end of April, and the timeline was such that it looked like he wouldn't have time to be ready, but he has had the full contact. He shed that red jersey about a week ago, and he's apparently, according to Tommy Reese the other day, in their mix. And again, I don't put much stock on a depth chart. You don't see Jabron Payne's name on that depth chart, but he had a very big, very impressive camp, according to McCullough publicly, and he's a guy who's got good hands, and he can stretch out, go into the slot, and help out that way. Tyree's gonna, with that speed, you're right, big, you know, he wears that 25, that's the speed number, that's the rocket number, he's the track guy, and I think you'll see, he's a good route runner too. I think you'll see him in the slot as well, because, Matt Salerno's another guy who's a better athlete than people might realize. He's a good slot weapon as well, sure-handed guy, but can just got a little wiggle.
Okay. Let's move to the defense. I guess Isaiah Foskey is maybe the star of the defense. Is that fair to say?
Yes, it is. You don't get to be in the hangover booth with all those lines unless you're really good at getting to the quarterback. And, you know, with a 10-sack season or a 9-sack season this year, he'll be the all-time sack leader in this program's history, and that's one of the big things that got him back here, rather than going to the draft and be late first, early second. And he could be right up there with Mayer in the top 15.
Okay.
He is really hard to block. And I do think that Al Golden, being the new coordinator here, not changing, not wholesale changes, because the old coordinator's that coach, but those NFL principles, some of the things that they'll ask of a lineman who's agile like Foskey, maybe to drop into coverage occasionally because he's going to get so much attention because there's be so much chipping on him and outright doubling. There'll be times when he might do some things that he hasn't been asked to do. They have very experienced linebacker group, and they have some athleticism on the edge with the Maris Leofau, Prince Kali is another name after to keep an eye on after early camp concussion. He's back, and they're saying good things about where he's at. So, Jack Kaiser, J.D. Bertrand, these are solid guys. One of the things to really keep an eye on is yards after contact. What Henderson does for the Buckeyes after contact is astounding. I mean, that's a full season for most people, you know, the whole deal. But just after contact, and missed tackles were a huge problem for the Notre Dame defense against Oklahoma State, and a huge problem at Florida State last year in the opener. They did have more contact, I believe, in this camp. That's one reason that they had more injury concerns. They're going to have to wrap up. Al Golden cited that obviously is one of the real key. It's always a key. But, you know, you don't wrap up here. It's not just the first down that you're giving up. It might be six.
Right. And Ohio State should be familiar with one name in the secondary. Brandon Joseph played very well against Ohio State in the Big Ten Championship game in 2020 for Northwestern. Is he kind of the star of the secondary? It's probably a little tough coming in as a transfer, but he's certainly a talented guy.
No, he's a talented guy. He's a confident guy. He's outspoken guy. He's not afraid. But I've gotten to spend some time around him at a recent, event that he did at something called Unity Gardens, and in that 3-hour span, he just exuded confidence and then talked pretty openly. It's on our website at ndinsider.com about what he can bring and what it means to how he tries to outthink every quarterback, out prepare. He wants to know what the quarterback's going to do before he's even going through his progressions, and he's trying to transfer that confidence to a secondary that is without Kyle Hamilton now, but it's important to keep in mind Kyle Hamilton went down in the USC game last year, so he didn't play down the stretch, second half of the season essentially last year, and they had to work mix and match around him, and so it's they've already experienced life without Kyle Hamilton. Now they inherit this guy who was an All-America just as a freshman in 2020. Real incredible ball skills, it would seem. And there was a period in the spring where in a 9-practice period, 9 days of in the spring, he had eight interceptions. So you could say that's not a good indicator for Buckner or Pine. That's part of it, but also this guy's a ball hawk, and he's gonna look for opportunities to add Stroud to his list.
Right. Well, let's kind of cut to the chase here. Overall talent level of Notre Dame compared to Ohio State. Now, again, you cover Ohio State or Notre Dame. I cover Ohio State, so it's hard. You know, I don't know much about Notre Dame. You probably don't know that much about Ohio State. But what's your sense of it?
Well, my sense is that point spreads like this don't happen by accident very often. They're not that wrong. Sometimes, Joe Namath and all
right,
that.
Right.
It can be off here and there. But, Notre Dame was a 20-point underdog against Alabama in the semifinals in 2020 and ended up losing by 17. I'm sure, you just look at the recruiting list in recent years. Notre Dame's recruitment in 2023, 2024, will be up there at an Ohio State level, it would appear, if they can hold on to these guys. But in recent years, this group that cycled through, there's a difference. There's a notch or two difference. But there's plenty of speed here. There's plenty of strength here. There's a winning mentality here because of the 54 wins in a 5-year span. And, they're playing with house money as they go over there. They can shock the world. But I do think they're going to need a lot of help. I would think it'd have to be a +3 turnover margin for Notre Dame. And I've said that I think they need to control the ball for 35 minutes or more, play keep away. And that was whether that's with a short passing game, whether that's with Tyler Buckner getting around the edge with his speed, or whether it's just a heavy dose of Audric Estime, that's probably the formula. But it's still unlikely.
Okay. All right. Mike, is there anything else that you would like to add?
My goodness, Billy, that's all I know. You exhausted. I hope
you were very helpful. I've learned a lot. I hope our readers have learned a lot.
I have no more knowledge, and I would just be making stuff up at this point.
All right. Well, Mike, again, thank you so much for your time and your insight. Mike Berardino from the South Bend Tribune covers Notre Dame. I will say, you started in this business in 1989. There aren't many people who can say this, but I started before you. I started in 1988. So this might be the most experienced beat writing combination of the season.
that's for another podcast, isn't it? We can tell some more stories.
Yes, we could. We could talk about couplers and driving in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, at a McDonald's trying to find a way to send our stories.
Absolutely. I referenced couplers just the other day to my 24-year-old co-beat writer, Justin Frommer, and he had no idea what I was talking about, and it wasn't even worth trying to explain.
Yeah, the old candies.
Oh, yes, Trash 80, and how exciting it was just to see 3 lines of text there. Like, whoa, it's not going to just go away. I also tried to tell him about the Telegram. Again, I want to save this for our next podcast, the most boring podcast ever, but there was a man down in at an NC State game, Joe Teedy, I believe, was the columnist down there, and he was upset with the Telegram that it was about a 40-pound, 50-pound item. You were just happy to lug it up and down the stairs and get there in one piece. and it ate his story, and he threw it out of the window after the game. He threw it right out of the press box window, and I just hope to get through Saturday night and not have to go flinging any Dell laptops through the window at the horseshoe.
Let's hope not. All right, Mike. Well, thanks again. I appreciate it, and I know our readers do, listeners do. So, again, I'm looking forward to seeing you on Saturday. I'm looking forward to what I hope is a great game.
Outstanding. Have a good week, Bill. Thank you.
Take care.
Be sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.